You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Today's episode of Faces and Feels is brought to you by Dude, Where's My Ring? At DWMR Perth, it's no ring, no holds barred action straight out of Perth, Western Australia. Check out all our shows for free right now on YouTube and be sure to follow us on social media. What it is, what's up, and welcome everyone to Faces and Feels. I am your host, Rafe Houston, and today I am joined by a very special guest. My first wrestling interview of the year, and I'm very, very excited. This man's been on the bucket list for a while. He is TMDK's, New Japan's, and also Dude, Where's My Rings, Mikey Nichols. How are you today, my man?
I'm good, man. I'm trying to recover from an intro like that. Holy shit. How do I live up to that? That's great. But thank you. All nice things. I appreciate it.
Look, I had a brief dabble doing ring announcing for Dude, Where's My Ring on like not the last shows, but the previous one. So I feel like I got my chops in. It really hyped me up to be able to do that justice. Thank you, mate. Well, I want to thank you for your time. You're obviously on tour in Japan right now on the New Japan Cup tour, kind of robbed in the first round if you fucking ask me. But but hey, he's doing his best and we're grabbing him between chores and gym and all the things that you need to do on the road. How are you keeping it all together, my man?
I'm good, man. We got one more match. Tomorrow is the last day of the tour. So surprisingly, body's held up surprisingly well. A lot of my injuries now is just because I'm old.
Yeah. So. Same. And I'm not a wrestler.
I make a certain noise now when I stand up. So that's how I know I'm old.
That's how you know. Yeah.
But no, it was good. It was a bit different because Shane wasn't on the tour and neither was Fujita. So just me and Zach doing tag stuff, which is great. But just a bit different because normally there's a whole bunch of us there and there's 8-man tags, 6-man tags, everything like that. So
yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, it's not like it's anything different. I've known him, wrestled with him, against him for a decade. So like it's just, you know, a little bit different dynamic, but it's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's an interesting combination and it's like really fun whenever like there's any different combination of TMDK. And I've got to say like the current iteration of it and you guys like coming up in New Japan has been one of my favorite aspects, bringing in Robbie and Zach and Fujita and all that stuff. And like TMDK actually becoming like a full faction in New Japan and not just a tag team has been really cool.
Yeah, man. Thank you. It's been fun. Like ever since it was brought up, like when it was Wrestle Kingdom whenever it was, and we first added Zach and stuff. I mean, it was always a kind of thing, like, we'd always talked about it and things like that, but he was always doing this thing and then he joined Suzuki Gun and then COVID hit and then everyone's working in different companies and then everything, you know, but now it's all kind of come full circle and it's great. It's essentially just now hanging out with your friends, just talking shit and hanging out with your friends basically.
Yeah.
And off camera, so it's fun.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. It really felt like, you know, when Suzuki Gun disbanded, and then, like, they're like, oh, we're all going to be friends, but we're all going to do something else or whatever. And then Zach announces for TMDK. It really felt like that level up for him. It's like, oh, fuck, he's taken on his own faction and he's doing his own thing and you guys moving together. And it felt like a big shift in the New Japan landscape. So I found it really exciting. And I think you guys have really been carving out your own space in a kind of landscape that had been a little bit wishy-washy for a while, like what's Chaos even doing, what's Hontai, whatever, and then suddenly there's this new faction and it was, like, really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it was, like, Zach's obviously, I might be biased, but he's obviously the best wrestler in the world, so, like, anything, even just to play the smallest part and, you know, level him up, so to speak, of what he's doing.
Sure.
Like, it's great. Great just to watch.
Yeah.
Like, I joke about it all the time, but I'll be standing in the apron watching him do something and I'm like trying to like fathom what's happening and trying to learn while I'm there. And yeah, it's just great to be a part of it all. And he's like, like he's been the best wrestler for years, but now everyone's finally starting to realize. So it's great to be a part of it.
Sure, sure. I do another podcast with a bud of mine that's based in the UK called, well, it was called Okada Shorts, but now it's called the Ichiban Sweetcast. And we did an episode called Is ZSJ the Next Ace of New Japan? And, like, I honestly believe he is. Like, I believe that with all the movements that have happened and the different people that have, you know, been pulled out and jumped to other companies and stuff like that, he stands there as, like, a shining example of, like, who else is a fucking match factory like him? You know what I mean? I feel it's next man up for him, and I'm really excited to see what is next for him.
Yeah, well, you see, with New Japan, like, forever it was only ever kind of Japanese people that were
sure
the champs, and, like, that was – I think AJ was a, maybe AJ Styles might have been the first one to whatever. It was around that time when the whole thing kind of exploded and then, you know, was a free for all and things like that. But he's obviously come out on top as, like, this is, I don't know, as like almost untouchable in the league of his own.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And like the way he, you know, he obviously speaks Japanese and lives there and is part of the company, it's almost, I'm sure for them, even though he is, you know, a Western wrestler, he must feel like, especially after all this time and sticking it out through COVID and stuff, he must feel like one of the guys, right? Like you'd look at him like he's part of the team, you'd have to think.
Yeah, and I saw a promo I did not long ago where he was saying, I think it might have been after the Danielson match, he was saying where, like, he doesn't care about money, blah, 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 doesn't want to go anywhere else, he wants to end his career. And that was, like, not to, I don't know, break any fourth walls, but that's definitely, like, that's just him. That's
just sure. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very fun to watch.
That's so awesome. Well, thanks for jumping into that stuff. That was a really awesome way to get started and to give everybody a little bit of a background of what's going on with New Japan. But let's rewind a little bit. When I do these shows, I just like to really like rewind to what even caught your attention in wrestling, and then kind of, you know, do a quick synopsis of sort of everything that's come through your journey, because you've obviously had a bit of an interesting one, not only starting WA wrestling or playing a part in that in a country where it didn't even exist, through everything you've done, through WWE, Noah, New Japan, everything, and then today. So if we rewind all the way back and you think about some of the first, like, wrestlers that stood out to you, some of the first faces that caught your attention and made you interested in wrestling, who immediately comes to mind?
There's a moment, I can tell you the exact moment when I started. I think it's Rumble 91, and Hogan wins and he's waving the American flag and everyone's cheering. But that was the exact moment when that's exactly what I wanted to do forever. Yeah. You know, and then things send in, you see the Ultimate Warrior and you're like, holy shit, who is this guy?
You know? Who's this and absolute then, fucking maniac? Yeah.
And same. Then, you know, at 94, and then Brett's Brett's up. The number one guy, and then I was like, holy shit, you know, and then it all went from there. But the initial thing was definitely Hogan at Rumble just waving the flag. I don't know, it's an image, it's kind of hard to explain, but just like as a 5-6-year-old watching that, it's I've never seen anything like it. So I was like, holy, I want to do that. That's cool.
Yeah. And I felt the same. Like, I remember when you'd watch like Coliseum home video and shit like that, and you'd see like Hogan's entrance, and they always had the video, and you'd see like Hogan pull up on a motorbike and all the like kids run to him and shit like that. Like, I've had this conversation with American wrestlers before. I'm like, that felt crazy cool to me, and I'm in Australia. What did that feel like being an American kid like at that time? You know what I mean? They were like, it was crazy patriotic. Like, it was nuts.
I'm always like, if I go back in time to any time in any place, I always say like around mid-90s, 95, 96 in Orlando when Hogan's just joined WCW and, like, no one knows that the world's awful and everything's all, you know, like, you just see the theme parks and then, you know, everything like that. I think it would just be such a magical time. It's fucking awesome.
Absolutely. When all your heroes still had all their fucking stardust on them, they hadn't been, social media didn't exist and you didn't have to know about all the horrible things that happened in the background.
Exactly. The innocence of
When before podcasts exist, before you knew about the prevalent drug use, all the terrible shit.
Yeah. So, oh boy.
Yeah.
That's why Dark Side of the Rings are hard one to watch. I'm like, I understand that the industry's messed up, but you don't rub it in my face.
Yeah. It is. It's hard, right? Because like, and especially like today, like sometimes I do wish that I sort of was as connected as I have. I've definitely known things about people where I'm like, oh, this is really disappointing to kind of learn. But like there was a certain innocence and honesty about those heroes, you know, the those larger than life, almost comic book characters, you know, like that. You're like, I just don't want to know. Like, can you guys just be that and not be real people? Because I don't need my childhood destroyed.
Exactly. I'm with you 100%. So yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. So then how do you, because I was obviously also a kid in Australia watching these things, being like, how cool would it be to be a wrestler? But it felt so far away. It felt impossible. I grew up in Dongra and then in Geraldton, like, which for anybody who doesn't know the geography of West Australia is like 4 hours away from here. So I'm like country town, small city kind of thing. And it just felt impossible, you know, like it. So how did you and your friends go about making it possible?
Well, it's funny you say Geraldton's 4 hours. It's like 4 hours and probably 4 years behind.
I go there and they're still like, you turn on the radio and it's still songs that I graduated to and shit. I'm like, has anything else happened here?
But no, we like any kids growing up in mid-late 90s, like we end up just throwing each other around the backyard, you know. Like, so we created our own little thing and we were doing all that. And then we met other people in Perth that were doing the same thing and it was kind of like, whoa, other people like wrestling as well?
Yeah.
And then, you know, everyone kind of combined and then one thing led to another and then we tried to put on a show with a kickboxing ring and it didn't go badly. It didn't go great, but yeah. Let's just say.
And no, how old are you at this point?
16. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I was 16. Yeah. So it was November 2001. So yeah, 16.
Yeah. Okay.
And then that went okay. And then word went to, I must go to Adelaide. And then Jag and Harry, who at the time were the mainstay wrestlers in Adelaide that you would see on the internet as it was then.
Jag is Hartley Jackson, yeah? If I remember correctly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what I should have led with. But he is. Him and Harry, between the two of them, you can't really talk about the history of Australian wrestling without mentioning them.
Yeah.
Because they're essentially the reason that EPW existed, which is the reason I exist, which is the reason Shane and everyone that's come through there. But so they got in contact with us, and Cole Devaney, who was their coach, an old shooter from back in the day, he said, you know, he would train a bunch of the guys from Perth. So there was a group of them that went over, older than us, because I was 16 and my mum, you know, would have had a heart attack if I said I'm going to Adelaide for 6 weeks.
Now, just to pause for 1 second, because I have talked to Davis Storm, the godfather of Australian wrestling, as they call him. He will tell you it's Jag or Hartley Jackson. But he mentioned that when he started and him and his mates started throwing each other around and stuff, they were sort of in a group of people doing that. And then they met another group of younger dudes that were doing the same thing and they sort of came together and formed a thing. Which group were you? Were you the younger dudes? Because I think I was like 22. And I was like, that's crazy.
Yeah, we were the younger group. So it was me and a bunch of guys I've known forever.
Yeah.
Like the guys I went to school with, but a couple of the guys I've known since I was 5 years old. So we all came up together and everything. So we had our thing and they had their thing. And then worlds kind of collided and came together. And it's weird to think like how all the bad decisions we made kind of all made it all work.
It all works, right, which is crazy. So at that point, the older guys or the guys that would have the opportunity to go there went to South Australia, went to Adelaide, and they trained for like 6 weeks and then they came back and they essentially trained you guys, right?
Yeah, essentially. So, yeah, they went for like a six-week boot camp of, you know, getting the shit beaten out of them.
Fucking get shoot it on and
and then they came back and basically taught us everything they'd taught that they'd learned. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of natural how it was like because they were older and then they taught us. It was kind of like, not apprentice, but you know, it was like we were obviously in awe of them because they were older than us and they'd learned all this. And so we're trying to learn that and we're trying to catch up with them of what they know. And then between like the innocence of not knowing and then just figuring things out as well. Mm-hmm. I think that was the key. Like no one told us how to do stuff, so we just figured it out ourselves. Yeah. We had the they taught us the basics, which they'd learned. So they only knew the basics. So they yeah. know how to bump, do this and do that. They teach us that, and then together we all kind of combine and then figure out the rest of it as we go.
Yeah, exactly. And just yeah, develop and stuff yeah, like yeah. that. Did you have access to? Around that time, was there anything, you know, on the internet you could watch videos or anything like that? Or it was a bit harder back then, I guess, like to try yeah. to kind of find those kind of resources.
Glory days of tape trading as well. So mm. when Ring of Honor came out and things like 02,
yeah.
like so that was a big thing. And then everyone was all about their, you know, whatever tapes you could get. So like old Japanese wrestling, new Japanese wrestling, yeah. death, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But there was a website, I think it was a German website, and they used to put music videos to CZW matches.
Oh, yep. Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, you download them. It takes 4 days to download on a dial-up internet. But then once you get it, it's the best thing you've ever seen.
Yeah, you got a LimeWire fucking for Alice.
Yeah, four viruses, but you get the one video as well. So, yep. you know, you make it work.
It's a trade-off.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, so then you see stuff like that, especially the Ring of Honor stuff. You see that and you're like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and then – but no one tells you how to do it, so you figure out, oh, so you watch it and like, oh, what are they doing? You know, and then you figure out ways
to
figure out mm-hmm. how they've done it. You try and do the same thing. So, like, you're learning on the job, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. And so as you guys start to do it, you then, you know, start to build, I guess, what will become – EPW. Was it ECW to start, was it?
Yeah, for the first maybe one or two shows, it was that. But yep. then it was like, if you want to make a deal of, you know, you can't be associated with someone who's got that. And obviously, you're not going to be, if someone says ECW, you're not going to think of some shitty little company in Perth. You're going to think of, you know, ECW.
The so ECW, just, yeah.
Name, mm-hmm. changed the logo.
Yeah.
We went from there.
Exactly. So. Now, in my past stories, do I remember a story about you getting injured or something when you were younger? Like I remember something, you did something crazy or something like that. Like I'm trying to remember the story.
It was the second show that we did and I did, I don't know what it was, some twisty, jumpy backflip thing off the top and I headbutted the canvas and the floor. And then woke up in a hospital bed, so that was interesting.
Jesus, just knocked yourself out completely.
Yeah, yeah, with and had a giant scar down my head with stitches. Made the front page of the paper, so that was fun.
There you go. Any publicity?
Yeah, and I still my Dave Storm, and they still had the video for. He's like, he'll never show me the footage of me doing it, so I've still never seen it.
Really? Like, even today?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's got to the point where now I'm like, yeah. He's not going to ask, but like for a while he was like refusing to, you know, to show me, which is, you know, good on his part for.
Yeah. You know, we, he was probably thinking to freak you out. Like you probably wouldn't want to go again kind of deal.
And then everyone seemed to think that would be, you know, that would be the end, blah, blah, blah. But it was never a question to me. It was like, all right, cool. I'll give me a couple of weeks to get better and let's keep going. You know?
That's the fearless ways of youth, right? Now if I can stub my toe and I'm like, I'm never going there again. Just that.
Yeah. Having said that, wrestling's all I've ever known. So like,
yeah.
I mean that.
yeah, like this
is the start of my rocky road with the wrestling.
Fucking hell. So at which point do you then, obviously, like you guys are doing that, you start to branch out and do more shows and do stuff interstate. When does the first Japan opportunity present itself? Because obviously you guys were a big deal in NOAH for a while.
Yeah, so 05, me and Jag, Harley Jackson, we were like, all right, cool, we need to get out of Australia. So we decided we're going to America. So we had one booking in Chicago, I think.
Yeah.
And in LA, catch the the shuttle to our shitty backpackers where we're staying, you know, and check our email on the computer that they have there, you know, and our booking got cancelled. So that was not the best start. So, but he said, call this guy, David Marquez. He might be able to help you out. Mm-hmm. So we went to a pay phone, put our quarters into the machine and called Dave. And he said, come down to the New Japan LA Dojo, but he was in charge of that at the time. And then, so we turn up one day, catch the bus, and then walk for an hour or two, and we end up at this New Japan dojo. So, and it was right as everyone was leaving. And we had, what do we have? It was a, not a tryout match, but it was a practice match against, I think Daniel Puder was there and someone else. Mm-hmm. Remember Daniel Puder from Tough Enough Days?
Oh, I'm not sure I do.
Google, look up Daniel Puder and Kurt Angle and you'll see what I mean.
Oh, he did get minced.
Everyone was leaving for the day, and then they were, we had a bookie in San Fran. Mm-hmm. And they're like, all right, do that and come back on Monday. So we did, and then we ended up staying there for 3 months, and then went home for a month, and then I went back for another three. Mm-hmm. And then I won the green card lottery.
Oh.
You know what that is?
Yeah. It means you can stay there, right? Like,
when I was 18, 19, and I won that, so I was like, cool, I'm going to move there now. So
yeah.
So then I moved over there, but me and Jag had the chance to do a New Japan match in 2005. We were there for 2 days, I think. We had one match. I mean, it wasn't bad, but I probably can't watch it now without cringing. And then from there, it was just a matter of keeping – like, I went back and forth to the States a bunch. And then me and Shane kind of got together, and we were like – we should probably, like, everything's more fun with your friends. And, like, we used to go to shows and they'd be like, oh, we'll try and find a spot for you, which was just used to make us both so, so mad.
Yeah.
So we did that. We did Harley Racers camp, and then that led to one thing led to another. And then, you know, we just kind of kept at it. And we were at Noah for 5 years, and then we did WWE for a bit, and then we separated for a bit, and then came back with New Japan, and, you know, so that's where I am now. So
yeah, it's pretty wild when you talk about, like, you said all our stupid decisions sort of all wrapped around and worked out. It's pretty crazy that, like, you went to America with not much on the cards, you know, just taking a chance. You're given a phone number and you walk into the New Japan dojo, and then I'm talking to you now and you're wearing, like, the jacket. You know what I mean? Like, all these years later, it's 20 years later, it's crazy, right?
Yeah, because it's great from that initial one to 2005. And I met Rocky Romero from there.
Mm-hmm.
And we've remained close for years and years. And then after WWE, he was pretty much responsible for me getting a New Japan to start with.
Yeah.
I was in Chaos for a bit.
Yeah, when you came back, I remember, like, this Mad Mikey straight into Chaos or whatever. That's before Shane came along, right?
Yes, he's, like, you won't find anyone that will ever say a bad word about him. He's, you know, and he's helped me out more than I can ever properly repay him, so sure. You know, but that was that, and he's still around now. And then, like, I did the Chaos thing, and then COVID hit, which kind of messed everything up for everyone. Sure. So, but then I was just lucky, because coming out of that, as soon as I opened up the borders and stuff, I was able to get back over here and then reconnect with Shane. And then, you know, since then, for the last 2 years, we've both been contrary to New Japan, so I mean, it's worked out well, and it's always kind of game, you know, like the fly in, fly out, do 2 or 3 weeks in Japan, come home, spend 2 or 3 weeks with my little girls and my wife, and then, you know, go back and forth that way. So it's, lifestyle wise, it's worked out great.
Absolutely. Was that part of your idea of changing? Because obviously, yes, you guys were, you did the NXT thing, the TM61 and things like that. Yeah. I was actually at your last show in Perth for EPW. I remember it was kind of like, these guys are leaving to go to WWE kind of deal. And I was like, at this, you know, show, and I was like, oh, that's cool. I didn't really know heaps about it. I hadn't really been exposed to independence for much longer than before that, you know what I mean? And so you guys were over there for quite some time. When you took a step back from that and come back to Australia, like, you obviously have 2 young daughters and a young family and stuff. Was that part of it, like, not wanting to live in America, wanting to be in Australia, wanting to do all that?
Yeah, me stupidly thinking, like, oh, no, it's fine. I'll just come home every few months and, you know, it'll be fine, blah, blah, blah. Then some other girl's born, and I remember holding her and I was like, oh, boy.
I can never leave her.
Yes. So then it's – at the time it was fucking – it was really hard at the time. Obviously, I hoped things would work out the way they have, but you never know with stuff. But it wasn't really an option for me, and Shane was great about it. Shane, you know, he was like, "Oh yeah, fine, you know, I'll come as well." And it was like, "No, you do your thing, and I'll do my thing, and everything will work out."
Yeah.
Well, you know, kind of did work out.
yeah, that's it. I mean, well, he was on the main roster for a while under a mask, but he was busy, yeah, obviously, yeah. And then things changed, things happened.
He got to do that for a while, which is great. Mm-hmm. Put a bit of money in the bank and stuff like that, you know. But no, he recently got married, like maybe a year ago, I think. So, mm-hmm. I mean, things working out well for him as well.
Yeah.
It was just the whole environment. It's like you get entrenched in something and it's not what you thought it would be. And then it's like, it's kind of disheartening when you come to the realization. But then I come over here and it's like, this is exactly what I've always, this is what I, you know, what I hoped that would be.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, which is why I'm just trying to. Of it now.
Well, I do like it's one thing plugging yourself into like a big machine like that where it's essentially part of like a traveling carnival, right? Like you're just sort of like part of this big monster machine versus doing what you do now where it's kind of pick and choose and move and freelance and do whatever you want.
Not to get too into it, but like it's a creative thing to it as well. Like, to me, wrestling becomes like an art form. Like everyone, people can scoff at that, whatever it is. But you know, like I know what I'm doing, and I want to like what I'm presenting to the world, so to speak. Yeah. What I'm presenting, you know, and it's nothing like that. WWE just seem to be like kind of a number, like an easily replaceable gear in a part in a machine. You know,
sure.
Whereas Japan's the complete opposite, which is, that's why it's become so good. That's why I think me and Shane did well in Japan as well, because we're both creative and we both enjoy that kind of freedom to be able to do that.
Yeah. I think you can see that chemistry, right? Like when you guys sit on the side of the ring with Zach or whatever, or you're drinking beers after and you guys are laughing or you're talking shit in the ring and stuff like that, that resonates. That's what I love about wrestling too, and it's why I'm such a big fan of New Japan and the independence and stuff like that. Though I grew up on WWE, it became that point where I'm like, this isn't really what I'm looking for. This isn't really what I want, you know? And then since I became aware of all that kind of stuff, it really just like, I explained to it once to somebody, it's like waking up from the matrix, right? Like you unplug and you're like, oh, wow, wrestling can be so much more than just, you know, those camera angles and that style and the way it's always presented.
Yeah, like, and I obviously, when I first went to Japan, you know, everyone wants to be in the WWE, so that's all I had in my mind. You know, I knew Jack, so I never really put the time into understand the nuances and things like that to go into it. But like for the first six, 12 months, me and Shane were like young boys kneeling by the ring, you know, during matches. I think the most I've ever learned in wrestling was just like being right there.
Yeah,
seeing people like, this is when Akiyama was still doing it. And everyone like that. And then Kobashi was still doing it. So like you see the best wrestlers of all time and you pick up something like, oh, I wonder why they did that. And you run it through your head and then you're like, maybe that's that. And I'm just, you know, it's just connecting the dots really.
Yeah.
Because no one's going to, as well. So you connect the dots yourself and then, you know, and it leads to there and you find different ways that you can do it, the same sort of thing and present something different, but it's also the same. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of hard to explain, but you know, like Japanese wrestling and American wrestling, there's ways to do it.
Sure.
You know, you find different ways that you can put yourself into those positions.
Yeah.
To be able to do this hard and true formula, but just add different ways to it.
Yeah. I imagine that, like, you know, like in WWE, they obviously don't do a young boy system. So, you know, you hear like, you know, curtain sell out, people at the monitors watching, you know, these big title matches and stuff. But I imagine that, like, crouching by the ring, like watching these huge matches happen with these legends and stuff like that. It must be fucking amazing. You know what I mean? Like to just take it in and to be a part of it must be really crazy.
Yeah, no, it is. That's why I can, like, I'll always say that's the most I've ever learned, whether I was conscious of what I was learning or not. But like, and like looking back on it now, you see who you were there for. Like, we were there for Kobashi's retirement match and like, you know, things like that.
Yeah, it's like it's really special.
Yeah, and you end up meeting people like now, like when we were living in Noah, we were in the dojo, so like we were living on the bottom floor, well, under the bottom floor, so it's like a basement, you know.
You eating the chonka, doing all the training, living that, yeah.
The second floor is like the office, but then the third floor had the ring and stuff, and like to get through the showers, you had to walk up through the third floor, and I'd be up there in the morning, you know, hours before training. Kobashi's been there for hours sweating and, you know, every walk up there, my I don't know, all tired, my hair all, I'm like, ooh, like, but no, like, and then he came to, oh, he was there at our last match, I think, that we had, and he, you know, just like, I was like, how am I, kind of, I don't know if I'm saying friends, but like, he knows who I am, you know, he thinks I know who I am.
Yeah. How am I a colleague of this, of this person? Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. Yeah, absolutely. How did you find, please continue.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I didn't mean to cut you off on that topic, but I was just going to say, how did you actually find that entire sea change of being dropped into Japanese culture? Because it was something, you know, an opportunity that presented itself and you went there, but that would have been like night and day. We've talked about traveling in Japan. It's obviously something that I'm really fortunate to have done. My wife and I have been many times. I think the last trip we went was like our eighth trip. But that's not like working there and being a part of it, you know what I mean? So, and the Japanese society and the people and stuff like that, the way it works is fascinating to me and I think amazing. How was it to be a part of that and try and fit into that and not be a Japanese speaker and all of those things?
Well, it was maybe a bit easier because I had Shane with me. Like it would have been really hard if I was by myself.
Sure, yeah.
But at the same time, it's a complete culture shock because like mid-20s when I come over here, but still all I've ever known is like Australian and American. Like,
yeah.
For whatever that is, you know, customs, manners, pleasant, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then everything's kind of like the simplest thing is like, let's say, you probably can't see because there's an audio podcast, but like if I was to say come here, I would do it that way.
Yeah.
And go away with that way.
Yeah, he's gesturing like Morpheus in the Matrix. You know, come, go,
In Japan, switched. So if someone's saying come here, they'll do it that way.
Oh, like shooing away almost.
Like fingers,
Yeah, sure.
They'll do it that way. So
wow.
People.
So you're like, I'm going, and they're like, why is he disrespecting?
Little things like that.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, it's like fucking trial and error, like. Mm-hmm. You know, you figure something out, you're like, oh, maybe you shouldn't do that again.
Yeah.
You know, and then you figure out, hey, like, and it's kind of like I said, learning on the job, but like the same thing kind of applies to that. So you're like, all right, I probably shouldn't do that. Someone eats food. Okay. So that's the hierarchy of things and that's how it works. Yeah. And, you know,
Exactly. Like, I've always found them to be really gracious and understanding of me when I'm a big, dumb white person. Obviously, you're there being paid and you're doing a job and you're, like, learning things and living there. Are they pretty gracious with you or does it get to a point where they're like, motherfucker, just figure it out?
Well, when we first went to Noah, they just had a bunch of they had a relationship with Ring of Honor at the time and they'd had a bunch of we think of the best way. A bunch of people from, like, Ring of Honor Americans had to come over.
Sure. And, Westerners. Like,
yes.
Yeah. Ignorant Westerners like myself. Yeah.
Adapt to the Japanese styles very much. You know, so they had instant hatred for anyone coming from.
Right.
Like we went from there, but they didn't know that, you know. We were on the back foot to start with. But I think between me and him, because we're both kind of idiots as well, so we don't really know what we're doing. So we kind of plod around and just follow along. And then, so end up earning respect that way, which is. Like, so we would empty bags, empty ice, put it back in, be for the bus hour and a half before the bus leaves and, you know, like.
Just, like, make the effort, like, show them that you have intent and that you're trying to figure it out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did that for long enough and they put up with us for long enough that they're like, all right, they're not going anywhere. All right, now we can open up a bit more and, you know, show them. So, I mean, our stupidity kind of worked in our favor in that kind of way. Like naivety, we didn't know what we're doing. Like we had no idea what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know, go with the flow and see what happens.
Yeah. They're like, look at these lovable idiots trying their best.
Or just idiots.
And then also, I guess, adapting to the ring. Like whenever I speak to anybody that, you know, has wrestled in Japan or wrestled in other countries, they always explain to me that like, wrestling is its own language. They're like, you don't need to speak the language of the company because it is its own language sort of thing, you know. Did you have much adapting in the ring or did you find that sort of found its own way?
No, it's true. Like the headlock wherever you are, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Like there's different ways to present it, but the way Japanese wrestling as well, they've learned it from the English you know, yeah. So like tackle, drop down, whatever. It's all same, different things, but like, and there's different ways to present it and things like, you know, you're doing, you know, but you end up just figuring out as you go along. And then I don't know how we did it, but some of the guys that we wrestled, we'd have half hour, 40 minute matches. Mm-hmm. They don't speak English. We don't speak Japanese, but
just works. Just magic. Chemistry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially the stuff we did with Sagira and Tanaka, the tag stuff mentioned. We put stuff together like 20 minutes before the match, and like neither of us spoke the other language. Kind of like
just bit of pantomime, bit of sort of, yeah.
Yeah, I look back on that now and I was like, how the hell did we like do that? But like, I mean, you're entrenched in it like 24/7.
Yeah.
So like, that's all that you know, that's all that you do. And I think, you know, that's what's missing a lot. Like, you can come over here for two weeks, you know, do your thing and then go back home. Mm-hmm. But the best thing I can say to anyone is like, just submit, come over here for like months or so. We came over, we didn't know how long we'll be here for. They'd give us 3 month visas at a time. So we'd come over, go home a week, 2 days, come back, do another 3-6 months and repeat. Like,
yeah. You're just like, we're available. Let us know when you need us kind of thing and just open ticket. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wouldn't have had it any other way. Like if we had to come over here for a couple of weeks at a time, like you learn stuff. You don't get, you know, you're not involved in the whole thing. Like,
yeah.
I wish, and then granted, I'm an idiot and I wish I had to learn, like at least tried to speak Japanese more, because I think being entrenched in the whole thing, you like, it's like you naturally learn how to do it, but mm-hmm. I'm an ignorant white guy, so.
I've had friends go, you've been so many times, like, do you know Japanese? I'm like, I actually think I get worse every time I go, but there's a part of me that like desperately should try harder to learn it because I know like basic sort of greens and stuff. But then there's also a part of me, I think that I love Japan because I don't speak the language. There's a certain like peace that comes with that. I don't hear the judge. I'm sure there's judgmental comments. I'm sure there's like, this dumb motherfucker doesn't know what the fuck he's doing, but I don't know about it. I'm just wandering through. Everybody loves me. I'm having a great time. It's all, everybody's polite. Nobody's having a bad time.
Really hard to learn that. Granted, probably not as hard as English is, because I look at English and I'm like, we have the same word that means four different things.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's a little bit more black and white, but it is a major shift in the way things are thought about. But as you start to, I have studied a bit. My wife is quite good at reading it, and it's like the way they sort of structure things. Once you sort of get that, it sort of becomes a little bit easier, I think.
Well, it's the best, the way they structure, like especially numbers. Like that's, I can count to 10 pretty confidently, but after that, I'm pretty much. It seems
like that New Japan like, 20 count fucks you up. You're like, what are we up to?
But just the way the numbers run, it's very logical. It's very 11, you know, 1-1, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. How did you then find when we, you know, obviously living in Japan, living that side of ring, watching all that stuff, you leave Noah.
Yeah.
What's the time difference between leaving Noah and starting in NXT? And then what's the difference in training when you're suddenly dropped in that performance center? Because you guys were there in that sort of golden Triple H era, Finn Balor-y, like, you know, golden age of NXT kind of thing.
Yeah, so we did a tryout maybe 2015, maybe 14. And Shane did the tryout with a torn ACL on his knee.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so and so we got through that, and then they were like, yeah, cool. One of you guys, Shane, was like, I have to get surgery. They're like, that's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, so I went back to Japan by myself for 6 months or so.
Yeah.
Well, he had his knee, and then he came over for the last couple of weeks. We did a couple of shows, and then we were home for a week, and then we were pretty much there. So, like, 16, I think we started there. So it wasn't long after. So we basically finished maybe like February and then started there in April. So like, it wasn't very much of a difference. It was pretty much, but a bit, you know, in and out. But the differences in the places is quite substantial. So
yeah, like, I can imagine. Cause you're in there like suddenly training with athletes who want to be wrestlers and stuff versus, well, you know, people who are living.
At the same time, they had a strict way you had to go via Robbie Brookside's ring, which was beginners.
Okay.
You had to do that, and then you had to move up. I seriously got more injured in the first 6 months I was there than I did in a decade and a half of wrestling before that.
Like, really? Wow.
It was bad. It was bad. Like,
who was your trainer? Robbie Brookside, or were you in there with
for a while? Yeah, it was Robbie for a while, and then we moved up, and then you moved a bunch of different ones. But just like people that have never done it before, like throwing you like, and we were there 5 days a week, and then wrestling Friday, Saturdays. Mm-hmm. Like it was lots of flaws in the system, but like, yeah, you know, you do what you do. So yeah. Like, mm-hmm. You know,
absolutely. And I mean, you guys had a pretty good run there. I can't. Remind me, because you guys had like an epic title match. I think, was it with DIY, the one where you guys had that big scaffold thing or like?
I know we had Lots of Pain was that one, and we had a good one with DIY in Melbourne maybe.
Yeah, sure, sure.
So that was cool. So obviously like we're not schlubs, we know, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
We can do it. It's just, I don't know, it's all the other stuff involved in it.
Well, they had that whole like you've got a – restart from scratch at NXT, right? Like there's those stories of like you've got Kenta and Prince Devitt and, you know, fucking like Sami Zayn or whatever, all just sitting there watching like people run the ropes and stuff. They're like not allowed to participate yet and stuff.
That was for a while, and then the Cruiserweight Classic happened and like opened the doors.
Yeah, true.
That didn't fuck. So we were kind of we're like horrible. Me and Shane had the worst timing.
Yeah.
You know, everything. Like, we went to Harley's camp. It was, like, the worst one ever. And then we go to Nora, and they basically go under. And then we go to WWE, and fucking.
No. Don't want to say you guys are a fucking curse, but it's.
Well, I mean, you know, if the shoe fits.
That's wild. But, you guys had a pretty good run there, like, and were big part of the sort of title scene that was happening. And that was the time when I was really into NXT. That felt like a. Something I was really into where it was giving me the bit more independent vibes and they were telling a bit more consistent story. And that crowd was really special at the time. That was pretty awesome. Were you thinking at that time, you're like, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm really enjoying. Or were you like, I'm getting injured a lot. This is pretty rough.
No, it was good. And then like Shane tore his knee again. Mm. So that kind of put a halt to it all. So then it was like a 6-8 month. He did that. And then I tore something in my thumb.
Yeah.
So we were both on the shelf for a while, and that like I think if we had to keep going the way we were doing it would have been a different story. But just, you know, I mean, I guess things happen for a reason, and we end up, you know. So that was kind of, I think that was what did it for us. Like, and I hate the expression "good hands," but we're together. Like, we're very good. We can have good matches with anyone.
Absolutely. There's a resume that shows it. You know what I mean? Like,
And that was also a curse, though, because, like, put it into people that aren't good, but they're told that they're good. Mm-hmm. So, like,
understood.
You can't bump them or take them off their feet. And like, we had a match with Authors of Pain and just the Coconut Loops, and we weren't allowed to take them off their feet or bump them. And they were like, do 30 minutes. So about 5 minutes into it, they're like, take it home. I was like, obviously.
Yeah. one, I remember that one with the sizzler, because it's funny, you talk about working around people that maybe aren't at the same level as you guys, obviously. I remember that being like a highlight tag match, and I'm sure you guys were like, we had to have all the fucking bells and whistles because it was a nightmare. Like, you know?
That Dusty Classic final we had against Hordes of Pain, we were supposed to win that. And they told us the day of that we weren't. We're supposed to win. I think we had like 15, 20 minutes. We get the day of and they're like, yeah, you're not winning and you have 5 minutes. You know, like.
Right. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not the easiest, you know, we can work around it, but at the same time, you're like, fuck, all right, thanks. You know?
We can do. Yeah, exactly.
What am I going to do?
That's a lot. And so how long into NXT then, like, does your first daughter come along and, like, sort of your perspective sort of start to change, you know? Because
it was – right, when was it? So she was born – oh, boy, put me on the spot now. She's 5 now, so what are we, 4? 19, Jesus.
So, 2019, something like that.
So 2018, mm-hmm. So I was there for a year or two, mm-hmm. And then it was a real rough pregnancy as well. We thought we lost her a bunch of times. Oh, so, I hate like, that. It's Sorry, fucking mate. Brutal.
Yeah, I'm sure.
My wife is on bed rest for the last six months of the pregnancy. Like, it's just fucking tough. Yeah.
And you're like having to go to America.
I'm here. And then she was born. I was home. They gave me 2 weeks. And then I came back and it was like, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah. Yeah. Your actual life priorities, like, this is irrelevant.
There's only so much you can get from like pictures and videos and stuff, which is time that I can never get back, which I fucking still bothers me now. But with my second one, she's 18 months now. So so Lila, my 5-year-old, she was born and then I came home basically 6 months after that. So for that first 6 months, it was I basically wasn't there.
Yeah.
And it was like I was playing catch up for months and months and months. Like, we're great now and she's the best thing. But then with my 1-year-old now, my 18-month, whatever it is, especially when I come home from tour, I'm there with her because Lila's at school now 5 days a week. So while she's at school, my wife handballs her off to me and she goes and does what she needs to do.
Yeah.
So it's just me and her. And then, I look at that now and it's kind of like this, I couldn't imagine not being there. And I'm getting angry at myself that I put myself in a position where I couldn't be there. Mm-hmm. For my first one. So I was like, this is what I need to do.
I mean, it's a hard position to be in because, I mean, you're a man who, has been pursuing this dream and this career for his entire life, right? And then you're where you think the Holy Grail is and you're kind of working towards that. But then I guess you turn around and you realize that it's like maybe my grail and my goals have moved. Maybe it's like in my house with my family and not at WrestleMania, you know what I mean?
And you're like, this is more important. You've been chasing forever.
Yeah.
It turns out to be not what you thought it was going to be.
Sure. I imagine there's a disappointment there as well. You know what I mean?
It's hard to get your head around, you're like, I've been trying for one thing for 20 years and now it's not,
You're like, it's not what I thought it was and it's not what I've been hunting.
It also didn't fucking help when COVID hit, so I couldn't even do what I wanted to do, And
then you're trapped and you're like, all I've worked for is this, I've sculpted my body and my fucking skills to do this, and now I can't even do this thing for 2 years.
Yeah, it was brutal. I had one point where I was like looking for jobs, fucking night feel at Coles, and I was like, holy fuck. There was no wrestling, so I was like, and I still had a job, but the hours were cut down heaps, and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Ugh. It would have been. It was a scary time, man. For everybody and everything they were doing. I work for a music store, and at the time I was managing this store, Anna Wangara, and it was like fucking Village of the Damned, dude. Everybody had been stepped down and were at home, and it was just me and my mate with a table across the door. Just serving people in masks, what do you need? Oh, can I look at it? Absolutely not. You want this guitar? Take it. Fuck off. The strictest kind of rules and stuff. And you're like, does this ever end? Or like what is it? And when you're in a business that's all physical touch and fans and crowds and stuff like that, you'd be like, what is my future? Because I've worked towards this entire thing and now it may not exist anymore. I'm sure that was horrible.
I missed it by because I was paid per tour initially in Japan. And I was making more, but it wasn't regular. Mm-hmm. It would have been not long until I would have been salaried and contracted.
Yeah.
But then COVID, and then everyone's on that now is grandfathered in. So they're making this, it's the way it all works out. I was just like, fuck it. That 6 months, man, that's all I needed.
Yeah.
I'm building my way up now, so I can't complain.
Yeah.
It's good now. I'm home in fucking 2 days. So, it gets a bit brutal now because the tours, we had two real long ones in a row. So we had the tag league, which is 4 weeks, I think. Mm-hmm. And I thought that one after that's usually less, but they extended it a bit this time. So it was 2 4-week tours in a row. Mm-hmm. Then I got put on the New Japan Cup one, and Shane wasn't doing that. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, God. So it was like another, you know, it's 3 weeks now.
He's in the States at the moment, isn't he?
He lives in LA now, so.
Oh, right. So he's based out of LA, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Right, right.
He married a California girl, so now he lives there.
Okay, right, right. So he flies in from the States and you fly in from Australia when you go to New Japan, right? Okay.
Oh, that's funny. And then sometimes Zach will fly in from, like, England. Mm-hmm. So it's like three different corners of the world. Anyway.
For just like, I can't wait for my entire faction to turn up from around the world.
I know, right? Well, it's getting to that point now because we've got, like, more people now. So we've got Fujita. He's obviously in Japan always. Mm-hmm. And then Tito comes from LA as well. And then Robbie comes from fucking Sydney. And I'm from Perth. And it's just, which is also great. Because, like, where else are you going to get to hang out with your friends from other parts of the world?
Yeah, exactly. You know? It's cool, like, to have that, like, worldly faction. And then, obviously, TMDK is bigger than just the New Japan wing as well, because you guys here in Perth have got Marcus Pierre, Damian Slater. Yeah. I do have a bone to pick with him. He gave me a nut shot at WrestleBrania the last time I hosted that, so I didn't really appreciate that. But then Slex over East. Who's the other guy? So is, like, it Mikey Broderick? Like, who's the? Is there one more guy that I'm forgetting?
Yeah, we got Mikey Broderick. Yeah. So he's in Perth now, but he was obviously.
Is he? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that was the whole point of, like, Team DK. Me and Shane were like, yeah, everything's more fun with your friends. Mm-hmm. Like,
who came up with TMDK?
Yeah, me and Shane did.
Yeah. Okay. As a tag team name to start with, and then it
branched out. Well, initially started with us. Like, have you seen Demolition Man? They say murder, death, kill.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we were like, let's be team murder, death, kill. And then we're like, wait, that's not PG at all.
Need to change that up a little bit.
Yeah. So we still kept the letters and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
Like, but it's more what it represents. Like, I don't know, if I can say I had any part in, like, getting Jonah, like, where is that now, or, like, Sexton or anyone like that. Like, that's nice to know that you had even the smallest bit of input into getting someone's name. Like, especially, like, Fujita now, like, whatever he gains from being associated with us, like, if that helped him in any way, I think that's pretty nice.
It was so cool as well for him because they handled him differently. Like, Zach just goes, he's my young boy now, and then they just kind of graduate him out of Young Lion class, and then he's just, like, with you guys. And
he
wasn't on excursion. Like, he was just a member of Team DK. It was really cool and different.
But he's already better than me, so I'm like, you little fucker. And he's, what is he, 22?
Yeah.
Little shit.
Yeah. Robbie introduced him to me briefly when he was here for World Series Wrestling. Yeah, lovely dude. I didn't actually get to see him fucking wrestle because some absolute prick fucking broke into, like, 20 cars in the fucking parking lot.
Oh, yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, my car's brand new and the shattered glass all over the thing, and I'm fucking about with that, and I missed the fucking end of the show. It was the whole thing. It was really annoying.
Well, I had every intention of coming and picking him and Robbie up, and because, like, I have an alpaca and, a mini horse, like, a pony and shit up where I live. Because I live, like,
Oh, do you live in the sticks?
Well, that's not, like, living in New Shea, which is near
Wolfsburg. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it's, I call it country light. Yeah. So it's, you know. And I was going to take Fujita out there and, like, blow his mind with the amount of land that we have.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Considering it comes from Tokyo where everything's fucking on top of each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Then, yeah, of course, both girls get sick at the same time. So. Yeah. You know.
Game over. Absolutely.
Of course they did. But I'm sure he'd be down there again. So, like, I just want to blow his mind with.
Yeah. Apparently, like, I hear the stories, and apparently, like, I'm sure, you know, having an excursion to Australia, you know, with Robbie probably blew his mind just in general, like the freedom of Australia. Like, next thing you know, the dude's got piercings, you know what I mean? He's like, fucking looks
He's already cooler than me too. He fucking drives a motorbike. I'm like, shut up, dickhead.
He's the coolest motherfucker in the world. Yeah, it's, like, awesome.
We bought 10 acres up there now. So we've sold half it. So no, we sold 3/4 of it. Mm. Oh, fuck. So, yeah, there's 2.5 acres left. But, wow. Like, still
huge.
And kangaroos and everything. Like, yeah. Just fucking blow his mind.
Yeah, I guess in the future, you know, 10 years down the track, we'll be talking about how like the fucking, you know, current IWGP world champion was fucking on excursion in Australia and fed your alpaca and
hanging out in my back room.
Yeah, exactly right. Then it brings us to now, right? And so obviously in and out, doing the New Japan thing, but then you've also been, while you've been back here, doing shows with EPW like you always have, but a new promotion has started, one that's very close to my heart and that I've been a part of. We've never been in the same place. Like we've mentioned when it's happened, but I have been fortunate enough to commentate some of your matches there is Dude, Where's My Ring? It blew my mind when they announced you were appearing on one of those shows. How did that come about? How were you sold on it? How's it been?
Well, first I have it written in my contract that whenever you're there, I'm not.
Oh, fuck. So they haven't actually informed me I'm off for this next one.
Fuck.
Maybe we can change it. Maybe I can write a nice letter or something like that, and they'll say something. So this next,
I can't make it. Sorry, my horse is sick.
God damn it! Fuck. Guess I'm sitting home that long weekend. Like,
the way that like coming up, like I was saying, I'd get the CZW music videos from some German web, and you know, see all the deathmatch stuff on that, and that shit's like, I love all that stuff. I love the I know it sounds weird, but like the creative expression you can do from like any part of wrestling, I think, is
well, it's all different lanes, right? And I'm with you. I love deathmatch stuff. I've interviewed a lot of deathmatch wrestlers, but I wasn't exposed to it through footage. I was exposed to it live the first time. I went to Wrestle Kingdom and like I was given a flyer and went to Big Japan, and then suddenly they're hanging light tubes on the ropes. I'm like, what the fuck's going on here? And then like people putting on ponchos and shit. Like it's visceral, you know?
Yeah, I always wanted to go to a big – I've never been to a Big Japan show. I always wanted to.
Oh, really?
We did a – when me and Shane first won the Noah tag belts, we had a title match against a couple of the Big Japan guys.
Sick. That's cool.
Like we had a few, so like there's the Big Japan Strong, I think it is.
Yeah.
With the
Strong Style Boys.
The big beefy heavyweight guys.
Like Sekimoto and stuff like that. It's a legend.
We also had a match with a couple of the guys that I think are their deathmatch guys, and I always wanted to do like, you know, have a match in Noah, a wrestling match against them, you know, and then they beat us and then we do a death match and we win them back with, you know.
Like they beat you in your turf, you beat them in theirs.
I thought it would have been great. Of course. It never came to be, but just the idea of the death match stuff, I think it opens up a whole new, different ways you can be creative and put things together, especially with the one we're doing now because there is no ring at all.
Yeah.
You know, so that's like even coming into that, you have to think of different ways.
Have to be creative in how you bumped and stuff. Like in your first match with Dude, I loved it because you guys did all the stuff with the keg and getting bounced over the keg backwards. We were making all the Homer Simpson jokes and stuff like that, you know, and you guys were being real stiff, but obviously there's no mats, there's no ring. So if you're taking a bump, it's on the floor of a bar, you know what I mean? There's no ropes and stuff. And so you've kind of got to be really creative, but it is a bar fight fun atmosphere at the Dude shows. The crowd goes absolutely mental. And if I remember correctly, you were kind of unannounced and just sort of like walked through the curtain at the first show. Was it Slate first or was it Felix?
No, one of the Poles guys. So, Eli first, I think.
And then
Darren Slate after that.
Sure.
But like, I don't know, I think it's fun. Where else are you going to get the chance to do stupid shit like that?
Absolutely. I couldn't believe it. Like when I got asked to sort of be involved, it was just through, you know, mutual friends and things like that. Yeah. And Michelle was just going to do it as a one-off show. And they knew that I'd been in the music scene. I'd played in bands for years. Yeah. I probably knew people at venues. They wanted to put bands on it. And I started getting involved with it. And we were, just going to do that one show. And I was like, you got anyone doing commentary? And she's like, no. And I go, you want me to sort it out? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, now I need to fucking figure out how to do this. I'm going to fucking talk my way into it. And it's been such a special thing that has grown. Like everybody says, oh, yeah, fucking promotion is so thing and it's family and blah, blah, blah. And the shows are so special and stuff like that. But Perth has never had any. anything like this, you know? Like, EPW is amazing, but it's a completely different scenario. Like, they're night and day. They're completely different things. And the idea that we can just have these, like, bar fights in pubs and bars in the city and we can just pop it up anywhere and we can be as crazy as we want is literally insane. And I've really enjoyed your contributions to that. And then when they told me what was planned for this anniversary show, they're like, oh, yeah, it's going to be Hartness and Nichols in a death match. I was like, holy fuck. I was like, this is crazy because this man's coming off the New Japan Cup tour essentially straight into a death match in like a bar that I used to play shows in. You know what I mean?
Here's the old Rosebank, right? It's where it is. I mean, at the
It was Post Office. Oh, it was Black Betty's. So it was all those
Black
ones.
Betty, so Black Betty's, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Exactly.
I got pepper sprayed there once. Well, not me, but I was right as someone got pepper sprayed, I was leaving.
Yeah.
And it was fucking brutal. So
that's savage.
God damn.
Fuck.
But no, it's fun, man. It's like, it's a different way that you can do it. And I know a lot of the guys like love that kind of wrestling and things like that. And I'd like, because I'm pretty good friends with Jimmy Havoc as well. And when he won that King of Death, whatever they did.
Yeah, yeah. King of the Death match. Yeah.
It was fucking awesome. You know, it was great. And like, just that's like, I don't know. It's a certain taste to enjoy that kind of stuff. But like, I'm all about it. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And if I can bring any kind of more eyes to something like that, I think that's
awesome.
I don't know, it's kind of nice to do that.
Yeah, like, it is.
Also, it's fucking fun. Where else are you going to get to throw a keg at someone? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly right. You're like, can I throw this fucking thing? And like, when they're getting it already and like they're building all this stuff besides, like, you know, before the shows and stuff, I'm like, what are you fucking maniacs up to? Here's fucking Slade and fucking Dale wrapping a steel bed frame in barbed wire just in thongs. Like, fucking, I'm like, where's the OH&S in this fucking place?
But also, I came up in the time like when hardcore wrestling was all the rage.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, like I still remember the Mania 14, they had the dumpster match.
Yes.
When it was Terry Funk. I was like, that.
Loved it. That's one of my favorites with the. It was like New Age Outlaws versus like.
I hung out with Billy Gunn and Road Dogg, but, you know, I'm like.
Sure.
And like Carino as well, he's become one of my real good friends. Mm-hmm. And like, always talk about him and Tajiri in ECW. I think it was Hardcore Heaven, maybe 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And like, because he was, and we'd have, he was my coach for a bit in NXT, and we'd have different like skull sessions where you watch matches.
Yeah.
And I'd always be like, can we watch you and Tajiri? It's one of my favorite matches. And he was always like, why are you being a dick? I was like, that's absolutely not.
You're like, I'm not working here. I love this.
Yeah.
It's funny that you mentioned Carino. When they were just over here for Elimination Chamber, and my mate runs a water sports company, shout out Ultimate Water Sports. He does like ski biscuiting and boat tours and, you know, jet skis and all that thing. And he messages me and he's like, hey, I've got some wrestlers coming on the thing. He's like, do you know who Steve Carino is? I'm like, fuck yeah, I know who that is.
Yeah. It's funny how things work out, huh?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He said he was like the nicest.
So like, we were raised on like peak ECW. So like blood, death, destruction, you know, all that fucking. So I can do that. That's like I don't want to say a night off, but it kind of is. You know, like,
Is this, then, this your first official death match?
Yeah, I think so. I thought the other ones were, but no, this one must be. But
yeah, yeah. Well, I think they call them brewery brawls, right? Because it's always hard to work out that line of like what's a death match versus what's hardcore or whatever. I think the difference is usually glass and intention, but.
Like, I'm trying to find some piranhas or like a crocodile, just, you know, to make it a little bit different.
Just crank it up a level, like back in those old FMW ones where they're like, it's a piranha match and there's like a tag and there's like some goldfish in it or some shit.
But not to like, you know, not to put a damper on it, but it's always funny. Like, so I'll do that and then after that I'll go home, you know, get home, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, super late. Too late. I don't want to wake anyone up, so I'll fucking roll up on the couch and with a fucking blanket and then there's a 5-year-old waking up at 6 by fucking double stomping me on the chest. And I'm like, oh boy.
You're like, there's nothing that James Hartness could do that would equal the pain of it.
it's just funny showing the two polar opposites of life.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly.
And then where I am doing this stuff. But no, I'm, I don't know, can I say I'm looking forward to it?
You absolutely can, because it's the point, right? You're like, it's seeking destruction. It's, you know, it's seeking the thrill of it, you know, and figuring out what's going to happen. And it's going to be the biggest show we've done. It'll be the biggest venue that we've had. And it's, you know, 1 year of something that was supposed to be one show. So I think it's really, really exciting.
Isn't that crazy? And 1 year as well, like I was in the audience for the very first show. Like there was no way I was missing that.
Oh,
like,
really? Were you there? Jeez, where? What's it called? It's closed now, so I don't even remember what it's fucking called.
Yeah, what is it?
Mind blank. It's like literally. If you look over my, you can see it from my fucking house. I can't even remember the name of the venue.
That was a great venue for it too. They had the little pit where they were doing. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think they used light tubes and they didn't go down so well.
Well, I was right there, so I was doing the commentary on the thing.
Okay.
And in that tag team deathmatch, it got pretty fucking hairy pretty quick. And the guy was like, yeah, it's fine to do glass sort of thing. And then it started flying around and I watched him up on the stage and like just being like, no, like this is, he just got way too hot too fast for him. Ironically, when
I was there in the crowd yelling on the violence.
Oh, it was savage. Joel Bateman just pouring like fountaining blood along that table. And we go, are you all right, man? They're fucking bleeding everywhere. He goes, oh, yeah, you're never going to die from a head wound. And we're like, I'm sorry, what? What did you just say? Like, I know what he meant, but Jesus Christ.
Funny, I had something like that. When me and Shane first won the Noah tag belts, like Zach was seconding us, and Slex was there as well. And I was fucking bleeding like you wouldn't believe. And then Slex's like, do you want my shirt? I was like, no, I'm good. And then I talked to Zach and I was like, am I bleeding too much? And he's like, yep.
Oh, like, <really? he's> all... You're like, well, yeah, it was the intention, I guess.
Yeah, so I didn't plan on it, but that worked out to be fucking great. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it all adds to the atmosphere. Also, the venue's Badlands. It just popped back into my head. Unfortunately, closed now in Perth, but yeah, it was a great venue.
I didn't know it was closed. That sucks.
Yeah, there was like, I don't know if it's 100% closed now, but it was closing. Something happened, rent going up, things like that, and they're like, it's just not feasible to run it. Yeah, well, I don't want to say we ruined the venue. We did do other shows there afterwards. They were just like, hey, no more glass. I was there when we first did glass, just a touch at Seasonal. They let us do it, and it was successful. Yeah. And they were like, yeah, that was great. And then the next time, it's like, just do whatever you want. And then that got real, and I was standing there afterwards and I was looking at the carnage and the puddle of blood that was Jared Slate, and I'm standing next to the bar manager, and I'm like, so you are okay with the – how do you feel about the full glass now? And he goes, as the bar manager, I should probably be pretty concerned, but as a fan, it was fucking awesome. I was like,
that's great. What more do you want?
Yeah, there is a stain in that concrete floor that is Jared Slate. Like they were scrubbing it, and it's just like, this is just now a blood stain, like in the concrete. It's now part of it. So
it's funny because me, Slate, and the both Pulse guys, like we went through a phase where we'd be on these shows, wouldn't be wrestling, but we'd just like have a merch desk next to each other, so we're like merch buddies for years and years. So yeah. It's good.
No, they're absolute champions. But, yeah, absolutely looking forward to it. But, mate, I want to thank you so much for your time. It's been really fun getting to know you a bit, running through everything and just doing a quick rewind. And I know, you know, it's a night off basically of your tour and you chose to spend it with us and share it with the listeners. So I really do appreciate it, my friend.
Of course, man. It was great. Easy conversation, man. Do anytime you want.
Oh, that's so nice to hear, dude. Well, in the meantime, I'm going to have my attorneys file some kind of legal junction to get your contract changed so we can actually hang out in person. And if so, I owe you a beer when I see you before that long weekend show.
Sounds good. As long as it's a Team DK beer, we're good.
Well, I'll talk to Ryan. I'm going to have to get that fucking – I haven't even tried it yet because I went to Japan when they launched it.
Ah, see.
He said he'd hook me up. I'm hosting his Beers and Bowls event coming up in a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah, I think I'll be there.
Oh, you're going to be there? Well, he said there's a very good chance there'll be some.
like, I think I'll be home, but at the same time, I've been gone for a while, so we'll see what the old missus says.
Oh, absolutely. You got to do the family thing, but I'll definitely see you, dude. Where's my ring? And I'll maybe see you at that. So I want to thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your tour. Travel safe. Stay warm. All that shit. Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. One more day, and then I'm fucking heading home to the jungle that is my.
To the actual real chaos. Yeah, exactly. The real death match that is the expectancy of a 5-year-old.
That's the real death match. Don't worry.
Absolutely. No worries. Is there any social media or merch links or anything that you want to plug before we sign this off?
I'm Mikey Nichols on everything. So Instagram, Twitter, whatever it is.
Find him.
Hit me up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm not hard to find. That's my stupid face on everything.
I absolutely love it. Well, everybody out there, thank you for tuning in. Thanks to Mikey for Faces and Feels, for New Japan, for TMDK, for Dude, Where's My Ring, for all the shit the world. Cool. Exactly. It's all about peace, love, and wrestling. Peace out.
Perfect.
Thanks everyone for listening. Faces and Feels is a DIY project created and edited in-house by me, Rafe Houston. You can show your support by following us on Instagram at Faces Feels Cast, Twitter at Faces Feels Cast, and Facebook at Faces Feels Cast. Or send us an email with topic suggestions or feedback to facesandfeels@gmail.com. And don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. Our banger theme is Loose Lips Sink Ships by the Thunder Vipers. Check it out on Spotify. And now hang around for a quick word from some friends of the show. Peace out.
My body is a roadmap of pain.
DeathmatchWorldwide.com, the official online merchandise store that is only for Deathmatch Wrestling. Featuring official t-shirts from No Peace Underground, John Wayne Murdoch, Akira, Madman Pondo, Zona 23, Neil Diamond Cutter, G. Raver, Schlack, Necro Butcher, and many more. If you are a deathmatch wrestler, promotion, manager, or platform, and are interested in joining the web store, send us an email to deathmatchworldwide@yahoo.com. Deathmatchworldwide.com for the violent few.
Hi, guys, this is Lauren.
This is Michael.
And this is Your Dose of Death Podcast. If you're genuinely curious about the world of deathmatch wrestling, look no further, as me and Mike have you covered on all things in the world of deathmatch wrestling, whether it's
interviews,
show reviews, or everything in between. We have you covered on all things deathmatch wrestling, whether it's past, present, or future. And you're probably wondering where you can go support us. You can find Your Dose of Death Podcast on all major podcast platforms, especially along with the Count Out Network of Podcasts. And also, you can support us on the Count Out Patreon, as we have exclusive content only on the Patreon for all of our listeners. We hope that you go listen to Your Dose of Death Podcast very soon.
And see you at the shows.
This has been a Count Out Podcast.